Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond with your host, Christina George.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond, and I'm your host, Christina George, and I want to thank everybody for showing up as usual. You guys are awesome. I have been so blown away by the support that everybody has been showing and everybody listening. My network has been happy, so, you know, the big change, I mean, obviously, you know, I've got a new name for this show, but it is not a new show, but with the new network, it has been awesome, so I want to thank all of you. And as everybody knows, I always try to bring shows to or topics of the shows that you guys want to hear about. And, you know, something really big, obviously, is abductions, things like that. And I've had the pleasure of becoming friends with Benjamin Hewlett, which is going to be my guest tonight. Now, I'll tell you a little about him. I mean, he's a very, very interesting guy, has a book out. He's the author of a book called titled Alien Illuminati, Abductions, Psychic Dreams, Premonitions, and the Paranormal. And he's got a massive amount of abduction and contact experience. And I believe he offers a very unique experience, like many do, but he has things tangible to show for it. He has physical evidence that was left behind from visitations and abductions, and proof that he gave SETI, and we know who SETI is, information leading to the first Earth-like planetary system discovered in 2010, followed by many more. We all know this, that this has happened. What's very interesting is that we didn't hear anything about, that we already knew about all this stuff, and Benjamin had contacted them. So I'm very interested in having him explain all of this. I hope that everybody, as usual, will call in. Tonight's call-in number, if you're wanting to call in and ask a question, make a comment, or even maybe get some advice, is 818-341-8214. Once again, that's area code 818-341-8214. So with that, we'll go ahead and start. Benjamin, are you on the line?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you so much for showing up tonight and being part of the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you asking me to be on.
Well, it looks like, you know, we'll start, I guess, at the best place, which is the beginning. So where did this all start for you?
Well, I was approximately 12 years old, and I thought it was just like a weird dream at first until another one of my relatives kind of came into the mix. I was asleep. It was maybe 2:30 in the morning, and I woke up. This is in Buffalo, New York. There's no earthquakes or anything out there, and the entire house was just shaking and shaking, and I can hear explosions outside. So I get up, and I get onto my chair that's sitting right next to the window on the second floor of the home, and I look outside, and there's like ships flying in the sky. Now, I'll let you know ahead of time that this is probably an alternate reality because no one else saw this except for me. There were like craft flying around in the sky, and then what also looked like American craft at war with these other craft. And there were people outside running around getting injured, screaming. And this voice pops into my head and says, "Come through. We need your help. Come through the window." And I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm not crazy." You know, at the same time, I'm thinking this is a weird dream. So I have an uncle. This is where the relative comes in. I have an uncle who he was a musician, and he'd play nightclubs or bars up until 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And he'd come home every night ringing the doorbell because my grandmother would latch the door to where you couldn't use a key to get in. You'd have to ring the doorbell to get in. He would ring it just nonstop for like minutes until somebody answered. So while this is going on and I'm experiencing this thing out the window, I answer the door, you know, and someone suggested to me maybe I was sleepwalking and I carried my dream with me. And I'll explain in a moment how I don't think that is the case. So I answer the door and I say to my uncle, Arthur, are you okay? You know, I'm like touching him, making sure he's okay. And I'm like, do you see what's going on out there? And he's looking at me like I'm crazy. So he says, no, I'm fine. You need to go to bed. So I go upstairs back to my room. I look back, you know, I sit back on the chair and I look back out the window. And I notice a figure on my bed. And that figure was me. I don't know how I answered the door and I'm out of my body at this moment. I have no idea how the physics of that works. Okay. So I'm like, wait a second. I'm confused now. Is this a dream or did Arthur really come to the door? Did all this really happen? So I lay back into my body and this blue translucent, like a neon color glove, comes right to my face. It's like a space glove. There's no body or arm attached. It's just a glove and you can see straight through it. And I can feel the energy in my face, and it's waving in my face saying, we'll come back for you, and you'll change your mind later. I'm paraphrasing. I can't recall the exact words, but it's pretty much saying it'll be back later, and I'll be changing my mind. I wake up in the morning, and my Uncle Arthur asked me what was wrong with me. Right then and there, I said, okay, I really did answer the door while all this was going on.
So that's interesting because I was thinking maybe when you were first doing that maybe you were just having an out of body experience. But if now you get validation the next morning from your uncle that he actually did have this conversation with you and you did get up and everything, then that kind of blows that out of the water a little bit.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe I went back into my body to answer the door and then I came back out and I don't remember that sequence. But, you know, that's pretty much unexplainable. So I tell my aunt this story, and I really didn't know that she was into this stuff. She was into Eckankar and all kinds of things. So she asked me, had I been reading her books? And I'm like, no, I didn't know she had any of those books. And she found a story that was very similar to mine's. And, you know, she's like, you must be a walk-in. I never heard of any of these terms. I grew up in church. You know, I never believed in aliens or anything like that. And I didn't even get to the alien part of it yet. But, you know, I never believed any of this stuff. You know, I believed what I was taught in church, you know, and what I was taught in school. And little green men or little gray men never came up. Okay.
So
I didn't know what to believe. I didn't have any more experiences until a few years later where I did have one out-of-body experience, which was confirmed. And then the next time after that, it wasn't until I moved to California when I was 22. That I had an actual abduction experience.
Wow. So then up to that point, then what your experiences is a lot of interesting things about being able to see the spaceships and stuff like that. It almost sounded like when you looked out your window, it was almost like what you would experience, like the world, you know, and things like that when, you know, they're coming down and they're, you know, everybody's attacking everything and people are running for their lives. And so, I mean, I'm sure that had to be really, really scary, especially being a child and nobody else is seeing it. But so are you saying, like, when you were young, even though you had these experiences, you didn't see any alien beings? It wasn't until you got older?
Right. I saw the craft, but I didn't see any alien beings until I was 22.
Okay.
And now I can skip to that experience, or I can tell you briefly about the out of body experience. Which would you like to hear first?
Go ahead. I mean, do the out of body experience. Take it in sequence, however you feel comfortable with telling the story.
Okay. Now I can tell you the exact age because I was dating someone and I took her to my junior prom, so I was 16, 17 years old. This girl, she lived about a mile and a half from me, maybe 2 miles, and her mom was strict. She did not let boys in her house. She did not let them pass the front door. It was a duplex. There was another family living downstairs, and they lived upstairs. You couldn't get upstairs unless you had the key to get into the hallway. So it's probably around 11 o'clock at night. I'm sleeping, and I get this feeling that I'm flying, and I'm flying over houses. And next thing you know, I'm at her window on the second story. I'm looking in there. I see her playing a board game with her younger brother and her younger sister. I see that they have on their pajamas, and I know what the inside of the home looks like. I'd never been in there before. It was just not allowed. So I'm sitting here observing this, and then the next day I wake up, and then when I talk to her, I tell her I had a strange dream about her, and then she accuses me of peeking through her window because everything I described to her, the way the house was laid out, what they had on and what they were doing, was exactly what was going on at that time. I had to remind her that she's on the second floor and there's no way that I climbed up her house to peek in a window. That just wasn't possible.
Right. Yeah, much like Spider-Man, or, you know, you got some kind of Superman powers where you can fly up. Or
not only that, my grandmother would have killed me for leaving, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so that was, so at that point I realized, okay, there's more to life and to what our abilities are than what was being taught to me in the church and by school, you know. So I became interested at that point in astrophysics, quantum physics and all that. You know, I was at a young age trying to come up with time travel formulas and is it possible. That's the type of stuff I was into, was the physics part of it. I never, even at that point, thought of alien or anything like that. That was just beyond me. You know, I grew up loving Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, Buck Rogers, just like any other young kid my age, but never at all thought that any of that was real. I thought it was all just fantasy.
Well, so, right, because that's what we were told.
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, how we're programmed. You know, we're programmed that way. We're like living, breathing robots, you know? So
I do. And I'm so glad. Hold on. I'm so glad you said that, because this is something that I talk about all the time on both of my shows. You know, even with people with, you know, that have psychic abilities, I tell my listeners all the time that, you know, I'm nobody special. Everybody has abilities. Everyone.
Exactly.
But, you know, and they're very, very prevalent when you're a child. And over all the research that I've done, as well as my own personal, you know, experiences, is that about 5 years old, or when you enter school, that's when it stops.
Yeah.
And, you know, based on what you're taught in school, what you see on and told on TV, as well as, you know, your religion or church plays a big, big, big portion, you know, in what we believe. So we end up blocking them out. So,
yes.
You know, it's very interesting that very young you were able to decipher through this. And usually it is because of some very prevalent personal experience that they go through that changes the way they think, the way they see things forever. And once you realize one thing was a lie, and what, you know, then it just,
it's a snowball effect. Yes.
Right. Oh, great. And before we get back to your story, I just want to let everybody know, unfortunately tonight I am not in chat. As everybody knows, I've been having some issues with my phones and stuff. So I am running it off of the laptop and the show off of my hotspot, so I will not be in chat tonight. I appreciate everybody that is there. But Tiffany, my producer, is in chat, as well as Benjamin. So if you have a question that you would like for me to ask, please make sure to put it in all capitals in the chat room, and Tiffany will be happy enough to copy and paste it over as a message to me, and I will make sure to ask it on air. And if anybody, as I said before, would like to call in, we really, really love to have you listeners call in. And, you know, whether it's your own personal, you know, experience, whether it, you know, relates to this or not, if you have a question for, you know, Benjamin, comment, you know, we really, really encourage you to call in. So please make sure to call in. The number is 818-341-8214. And what you'll do is, you can also listen to the show through that number. But if you want to ask a question, all you need to do at that point is hit the number one key, and it will transfer you into the call queue. So then we'll you'll get transferred over to ask your question. So sorry to interrupt your story like that, but I like to, you know, continuously let people know to call in and what's going on. So, all right, so back to your out-of-body experiences.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, actually, I was over here signing up on your chat room as you were talking. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so at that point, I realized, you know, like I was saying, there was more to what was going on in this world besides what I was being programmed into believing. You know, as, you know, we only know what our parents or whoever is raising us teach us, and they only know what they are taught. So we are like filtered down information until it's almost nothing. You know, it's like telling a story in a circle, and you're not going to get the same story when it comes back around to you that you first sent out. So So, yeah, so basically, I know I wanted to touch on something you mentioned about, you know, having abilities when you were young and, you know, them going away by the time you get to school. And that brings up an interesting point. I remember this going on, I believe I was in the second grade. My teacher was Mrs. Wagner. Whenever we used to have to flip through the book, whatever book we were reading, and go to the next page, I used to be able to do it without touching the pages at will. And I used to be able to move my pen on my desk, roll it back and forth. I thought everybody could do that.
Right.
This is weird. Right. I thought everyone can do that. She pulled me to the side one day and told me to stop doing that. And that was the last time I ever did that because I realized I was doing something wrong. So
right.
So we're programmed into thinking, you know, these things are wrong, you know. I mean, the other kids
right.
used to observe it, and it caused a disturbance in the class. So,
correct.
You know, that ended that right there. I don't ever recall being able to move, you know. It was just small things that almost had no weight. You know, I'd flip the page, and then one of the kids would say, flip it back, and I would flip it back.
Right.
Just
right.
hovering my finger above the page, just hovering, and that caused a disturbance. So at that point, okay.
One of those things, too, is that, you know, when they say that it goes away, you know, once you go into school, for many it does. But there are a lot of us who it does not go away. And like you said, because anytime you say anything about it, it's something negative or they tell you it doesn't exist or whatever, then you end up just kind of living with it silently.
Yes.
You, I mean, you really feel alone because, number one, you can't tell anybody because nobody believes you.
Right.
You know, you can't bring it up because you'll get in trouble, you know, if you do these things. So
right.
it is something that, you know, many of them get, it just shuts down completely, like,
right.
you know, your ability with that. But with others, you know, that it will stay full blown. I mean, I could see, you know, spirits my whole life. And, you know, until I actually was able to kind of find a way to bind it, as a teenager, it helps some. But, you know, if it's there for some of us, it's there, it's not going away. So it is unfortunate, you know, the way things have gone, you know, and it was so close-minded back then that, you know, it wasn't even something, they didn't even let people, I'm left-handed. And I remember growing up and going to Catholic school and, you know, I would actually get hit with the ruler if I used my left hand.
Yes.
So I was forced to use my right because it was a bad thing. It was not right.
I heard those stories, yes.
Crazy, but yeah, yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, with my family being in the church, I mean strictly in church, going 3-4 nights a week, you know, almost as much as I went to school, if, you know, my grandmother or anybody would have known that I was a little bit different, I would have been preyed on and had demons cast out of me. You know, I've seen this done before. You know, I have an aunt that, you know, I've witnessed, you know, having demons cast out of her, you know, when she seemed to be a little bit different and I didn't want to be like that, you know. So
right.
I just kept these things to myself.
Yeah. It looks like actually already we've got a question for you, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
So it says, Have you at any time questioned your sanity after having any of these experiences, and how do you decipher whether it might be an illusion rather than reality?
Well, I question my sanity every minute of every day. but in all seriousness, you have to question your sanity at all times, because that's the only thing that keeps you sane, is to remind yourself that you're not insane.
Correct.
And now, what was the second part to that question again?
And how do you decipher whether what you're going through at the time is an illusion or if it's reality?
Well, it's weird. That's actually a really good question, and one that I've answered many times before. The way you decipher it is, like, for instance, let's say you have a visitation in the middle of the night and you can't tell whether it's a dream or not. It's good to have somebody to talk to about it to see what their take on it is, because you always want someone's outside opinion. And then sometimes
right.
it takes time, because there will be a confirmation later on, as always. Like, I'll get into a confirmation story later on that let me know that one of my past experiences was real and not a dream. There will always be a confirmation, or most of the time there will be a confirmation to let you know, hey, buddy, that was not a dream. This really did happen. Now here's the proof.
Right.
So there will be some kind of confirmation, and there will be like a something that will coincide with it to show you that it was – to show you that it was real, or there might even be some physical evidence left behind. Or, for instance, on one occasion, which I'll get into in more depth when, you know, when I come around to that story, is I'll ask a question, you know, such as the caller is asking me a question, and I will get the answer, and that answer will be confirmed to me in what I call this reality. So
there's
always some kind of confirmation. Now, I do have experiences to where I still don't know if it was a dream or not, so I don't really talk about those until I get a confirmation. And if I don't get a confirmation, I don't talk about it.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, because that is kind of how I am with my evidence. If I don't know for sure that I have stuff to, you know, back it up and to know that it is, I don't bring it up. It never will be seen or heard about.
Right.
But only those ones that I can get confirmation, validation, and know. But it's very interesting and important about what you said about talking to others.
Right.
You know, especially in these kind of topics. You know, rather, you know, we get the same thing in the paranormal side when, you know, somebody's got, you know, paranormal activity going on. And every single time that I get a client, the very first thing that they say before they start to tell me what's going on is, I know that this is going to sound like I'm crazy,
yes,
but I swear to you, this is happening.
Yes.
And the same thing, you know, I do research, and I've got the group on the other side, which does investigation and research into, you know, the UFOs, abductions, and, you know, everything else in the paranormal. And it's very interesting of how so many people, when they have these, they are so worried about, you know, not being believed, or the fear of rejection, that it kind of gets stuck, you know, where it does torment them, because they don't have any help or anywhere to go, and, you know, to be able to figure out what's going on. So to be able to find people to talk about, you know, talk to, like my UFO group is actually a secret group on Facebook. Facebook is a great place, but it also can, you know, be a bad place at the same time. And I would find that when I had it open, that I would get people that would, you know, want to share their stories. And then once they share their story, you know, then somebody's going to run in and, you know, tell them they're crazy or, you know, things like that. And so I was like, nope, I'm not dealing with this. So I made it a secret group, and you can only enter the group if you know somebody from the group, you know, that's recommending you, or, you know, add you. And I made it to the point where, you know, everybody in that group, and there's close to 500 people, I believe, in that group, they can go and they can exchange their stories between each other, or ask questions, you know, from the community that we have there, and get a lot of answers and support of people, you know, that are going through very similar things or the exact same things. And being able to link together with people that understand what you're going through, since so many people don't, is so helpful, you know, as far as being able to release all this stuff and being able to talk about it and get it off of your chest. So,
yeah.
You know, that's amazing. And actually, one of the people in my group, Lori McDonald, she
yes,
actually, you know her, yes, and, you know, I believe you are part of her group, but she runs a contactee and abductee support group here out of Sacramento. And when she first, you know, had talked about doing it, you know, she thought, you know, how many people will I get? Probably just a couple. But since she started it, it's like standing room only. Like, you know, she gets more people than there are spaces.
Yeah.
So it is something that is very, very well needed. And, you know, for any of the listeners out there, you know, and obviously we got a lot of people out that are listening and have gone through these experiences, you know, check and find if there's a local chapter, you know, of a support group. And there's a lot online as well that do UVU sessions and things like that. So I would definitely agree with Benjamin that is, you know, definitely a big thing, is to be able to find like-minded people that have had, you know, have similar experiences or have the similar thinking process as you do.
Yes, and to add to that, you know, when you do share things with people, there's an actual bond that you create. I'm not talking about just like a family bond or a friendship bond. It's something to do with the psyche part of your brain that most people don't realize they have. Like, for instance, you know, I'll talk to my sister Shanna all the time about this stuff, and I would always have psychic dreams about her that would actually end up coming true. We'd always share these things. Then one time, you know, I never really talked to my other sister about this, but we ended up talking about these things one day, and I said, you know what, I'm going to have a psychic dream about you. I can, you know, just to show you that this is real and it's not something that Shanna and I are making up.
Right.
So 3 days later, or it was about 3 or 4 days later, I had a dream about my other sister, and it was so strange. You know, it couldn't have been made up. It couldn't have been a coincidence. You know, I called her, I sent her a text. I said, you know, I had a dream that somebody put money into your account for a trip. And she's like, wow, that's strange. You know, she blew it off. A few hours later, she's texting me back saying, BJ, you scared me. And I'm like, what? I'm not going to name anybody's name here, but she said,
right.
Well, my friend just sent me a message saying that he put money into my account because he wants to go on this, you know, he wants a ticket that I have to go, you know, on the trip that we're going to. My sister and I were planning on going to Vegas to go to the Michael Jackson experience that they had at the time.
Yep.
And she, a year before that, she bought a bunch of tickets because she thought it was going to be like a big group thing. The entire family would go. But it turned out that, you know, people's schedule was just off. So she thought all the tickets were just going to be wasted. So it just went down to just her, she and I. So this person put money into her account and said he wants one of the tickets and that he's going to take the trip. And she thought it was just so weird that my message to her was identical to what really happened, you know, and it was just the night before. And there was
right.
no way that – she didn't even expect this. You know, this was a friend of hers, and he obviously had information, you know, for her account because she was going to sell him a ticket, I guess, a year ago when she first bought them. But she kind of just blew it off as, you know, he wasn't going to get the, you know, buy the ticket or anything. So it was just blown off. But I didn't know any of this. Even if she did, I didn't know that she bought these tickets for other people to go.
Right.
So that right there confirmed to her that there is something else going on. Even though she said she believed me before, that just confirmed to her that it's real and anybody can be a part of it, you know? So that was, you know, that was really strange. So when you connect with someone, you actually develop some kind of link. And that's just how it works.
Oh, absolutely. And I actually have team members, you know, that are on my team that are very, very connected to me. And it's funny because I've even had team members, I've had clients. Like, once we make that connection, like, you know, I have a terminal illness, so I'm sick on and off a lot. And they will know. Like, I won't have posted anything on Facebook. Like, the day before, they may have seen me, and I was feeling great. And then all of a sudden, I'll start getting phone calls, and I mean multiple phone calls. And,
yes.
You know, they'll be saying, what's going on? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, my back is killing me. It must be your kidney. Or do you have a really bad headache? Or, you know, and right away they know. Like, they're so tuned in on me that they'll know. And I even have certain people that will know when I'm going through, you know, issues in my life or something. You know, they'll say, you know, what's going on? I'm picking up that something's happening with you, you know. So it's very strange. And, you know, to people who they don't have they don't experience these kind of things like we do, it's very eye-opening to them and life-changing when they do have their own personal experience where it relates to them. And then it's
yeah.
kind of like, wow, okay. Even though they, you know, they may be family and they believe what you're saying, you know, but without that real, their own validation,
yes.
you know, it's not the same.
Yes.
So to
now,
get that validation, it's like, yeah.
Right.
I guess
this wasn't the first time that that she has played party to witnessing, you know, my dreams that come together intricately, because in my book I wrote about a story in regards to this a friend of mine that I had, to where I had a whole sequence of dreams about her in one night, you know, from the time, you know, that she called to the to the storyline that happened within the dream and the whole sequence that played out. And it ended up happening the next day, and my sister and her boyfriend at the time witnessed the entire thing, and they were a part of the dream, and they knew right then and there, okay, this is strange. How did he dream this before it happened? You know, so, but that was a long time ago, and you tend to forget, you know.
Right.
And that was a chapter in my book called Dance with the Devil. If anybody wants to pick up a copy on Amazon.com, I put it down to 99 cents just so, you know, just as giveaway, almost a giveaway pretty much. If you want to read any of that, we, you know, I can talk about it here. But, you know, so she knew about this back then, that I had these dreams that come together in very intricate sequences, and they will come true within the next couple of days. So, you know, it's weird. I still try not to talk to too many people about it. You know, I lose a lot of friends, you know, girlfriends or whatever. You know how it is. You know, a lot of people don't want anything to do with you. But I don't care anymore, you know. I wouldn't be living if I couldn't be myself.
Right. And, you know, the thing is that irregardless of whatever happens to us, I mean, everything happens for a reason. And I know that's so cliche for people to say, but it is so true. And you'd be surprised at, you know, the things that, all the good things that do come. I mean, and like I said, I mean, I do have health issues and things like that. And people are always telling me, well, why do you do what you do? Why do you take on the things that you do when it's, your health is so affected by it and things like that? Well, it's because that's what I'm supposed to be doing,
right.
You know, and it doesn't make any difference when anybody else tells me, you know, I now do what I'm supposed to do. I have gone through my whole life of people not believing that I have this gift, I've done everything from, you know, my mother's taking me to psychiatrists, you know, to, you know, my grandmother's taking me to the priest, you know, you name it. And so it's like, it's kind of strange now that we, for so many years, I was just saying, gosh, I just wish that, you know, people were not so closed-minded and they would realize that this stuff does happen and does exist. Well, now that it is, you know, people are becoming more aware and they are saying, yeah, maybe this stuff does exist. Now I'm noticing that, you know, all of a sudden everybody wants to be, you know, considered a psychic, or everybody wants to be, you know, considered
right.
this or that. And now everybody wants to believe me.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, now you want to believe me, you know, now that I've got a show and now that I'm speaking all these places and now that I've got all these testimonials and verifications that, yes, I'm right on, you know, now you want to believe me. And then those same people who discounted me are trying to come and want readings from me.
Yes. Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah. And I pretty much experienced the same thing, you know, the book comes out. I'm not famous or anything. You know, it's just something that I felt as though I had to write. And, you know, now everybody wants to join the team, you know, not to that extent as like what, you know, like superstars have to deal with. But you deal with it on a smaller level. And you also deal with the people that are jealous of you for whatever reason, you know, and don't want to acknowledge you. They wanted to be the person to do something different first, you know. And it's not that I wanted to do something different. I'm not trying to do this. This is something I've always avoided. You know, I shied away from, but I was forced to do this, you know. I started getting so many visitations, and there was a message that that I was told I needed to get out, and, you know, I wouldn't be left alone until I got this out, you know. Things started escalating, and I will get into that, you know. But, you know, you mentioned you had an illness. And, you know, the weird thing is, a lot of people I talk to that have these abilities, a lot of them have some form of illness, you know, one way or another. You know, I have what doctors diagnose as chronic cyclic neutropenia. And what it is I have a different immune system. At first they said it was a disorder, but, you know, I had a doctor that flew in from Japan. Actually, it was two doctors, one from Germany and one from Japan, because I was pretty much on my deathbed when I was 7 years old. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. You know, the American doctors, you know, they just came up with croup. And then, you know, when they couldn't, you know, they couldn't do anything to help me with that, that's when they flew in these other doctors. And Dr. Benjamin told me, no, he has cyclic neutropenia. And he pulled me to the side after being in the hospital for many, many weeks. He said, you know, you don't have an immune disorder. You just have a different immune system, and you need to learn how to live with it. You're just different from everybody else. You know, once every 3 weeks, my white blood count drops down to zero. I have no immune system for anywhere between 3 to 10 days. Once every 3 weeks, every 21 days on a Friday, that's when I have to pretty much take care of myself. But then, it, you know, my white blood count comes back up on its own. Now, if I have a cold or anything, whatever is in my body ailing me at the time, it leaves when my white blood count comes back up. You know, so,
right.
you know, a
right.
lot of people, you know, they don't do that. They'll still have, you know, whatever is wrong with them, you know, it'll go away until they get treated. Mine leaves on its own, so... You know, a lot of people, you know, even Lori McDonald said, you know, you're a hybrid, you know, and that's something I've always wondered. You know, if somebody was a hybrid, they really wouldn't know. You know, there's a lot of people out here that are, and we just don't know about it. So.
Yeah. And that is very interesting because you're talking about, you know, illnesses. I find out a lot as well. Like a lot of psychics are diagnosed with fibromyalgia or different, yes. You know, different things. And mine as well, I have a issue with my immune system as well. It's very weakened. And like if I'm around somebody who has a cold, I'll probably catch pneumonia.
Right.
You know, exactly. So I do have to be very, very, very careful. And it's very similar. Like my white blood count will drop dramatically out of nowhere. And, you know, the doctors have watched, you know, and I've had this for 11 years. So, you know, I'll go into the into the hospital or something, and they'll say, you know, not really anything that they can do really changes it. It just goes back on its own, you know? And so now it's kind of like you do get used to it. You do start to understand your body. So when people, like when I'm really sick, people will say, oh my gosh, you should be at the hospital. Why are you here? Well, the hospital's not going to be able to help me.
Right. You're going to be sick whether you're there or not. And you can often be sicker at the hospital because of all the germs that's around there.
Thank you. Yeah, because you're exposed to all of those other things, you know, and then on top of it, you know, it's like the torture that I have to go through with all the tests and everything to try to figure out what's going on is horrible. So, I mean, I'd rather just wait it out. But I do know, you know, when I get to a point where, okay, I need to be in the hospital. Like, you know, something's going on, I need to go. But I know that. And after so many years of dealing with it and living with it, you yourself know your body and what's going on with you better than anybody else.
Yeah.
And my doctor always says now, you know, I know that if you call me, you need to come in.
Right.
Because otherwise, I would rather not see him, you know.
Right.
You know, so it is very interesting with that. Well, all right. Well, so let's get back to your story. I'm sorry we keep getting off topic, but good thing we got 2 hours, huh?
Exactly. Yes. So now let's get back to the nitty gritty.
Okay.
22 years old. I'm living in Oakland at the time. You know, I have a few roommates, and you know, it's been several years since I've had any kind of weird experiences. Now, I'm in the music industry at this point, you know, just getting into it. I've done internships with some people, you know, I was in the studio with In Vogue when they were recording their EV3 album. I was working for their producers, Tommy and Denny, and Layla Steinberg, who was Tupac's manager. You know, so I knew a lot of people, and I worked with a lot of people. Now, I set up a recording session because I had my own private production company that I just started, and I was going to record my first song with a couple of artists. And I'm asleep, you know, I'm go to bed early, preparing, you know, exciting day coming. In the middle of my sleep, I wake up on a metallic table. I don't know how high up I was. I don't know how tall these beings were because I was laying down. But what woke me up was there was something being shoved down my throat. And when I woke up, I looked to my left, I looked to my right, and I looked at the end of the bed. I could see three gray beings on each side of me held my arms down as I woke up. And then it was two at the end of one holding one leg, one holding the other, and then one in the middle. And then behind me, I can feel the one behind me that was controlling the machine, whatever it was, with the long tube on it, shoving that down my throat. And then there was two more, one on either side of that one, holding my shoulders down. And I started struggling, and I got them off of me. Next thing you know, I black out. And then I wake up, and I'm coughing up blood. And my throat was real hoarse. I mean, I was in pain, you know, for the next 3 or 4 days, you know. But for that very day, I was coughing up a lot of blood. And I didn't have strep throat, I didn't have a cold or anything, or else I wouldn't have had scheduled, you know, any recording session. So
right.
That was my first and only violent, I call it the violent abduction. That was when I actually saw these beings, and I know that wasn't a dream. You know, I felt it. I saw it with my own eyes. I was there, you know. So I
now, can you tell me, though, why you felt like it was a violent abduction? Is it because they're holding you down and they're trying to do these tests on you? Because to me, this is very interesting to me because, you know, being ill myself and having to have a lot of tests and stuff done at the hospital all the time, it's nothing that I would ever, you know, choose that I want to do. But the doctors say, you know, you have to have these done, and so I do it. But a lot of times I get reportings that people have been abducted and that, you know, they have all these medical things done to them or these tests and stuff. And that because that's being done, you know, without their so-called permission, that they feel as it's, you know, it's bad because they were taken without their permission. Now,
right.
Is that why you feel that, or do you feel like because they were holding you down? Do you think maybe they were just doing medical tests and somehow, you know, you woke up, you were stronger than most, and you wake up and you're in the middle of this and they're trying to hold you down so that, like, you know, like, here's a perfect example. I had an endoscopy done 6 months ago where they put the tube down your throat and they put you not fully asleep but kind of twilight sleep.
Right.
And so they had put me pretty much to sleep, and for some reason the medicine wore off and I woke up, and of course I had this tube down my throat, and I did very exactly the same thing you did, is I started, you know, trying to move, get out of there, get it out of me and all these different things, and they had to basically hold me down and give me more medication to put me back under. And I had very similar, is that I had, it hurt me so bad. And I was coughing and throwing up blood afterwards, but they said that, you know, it was down there. And as I was fighting, like, you know, it was pulling it out and it was like tearing it out. So, which is why I had all this pain and blood afterwards. Do you think maybe that would be a reason, or is yours something you feel is different? And if so, why?
No, that's pretty much the reason. But the reason why I call it a violent abduction is because most people refer it to that way because they're taken out without their permission and they don't analyze it the way you just analyzed it. That's, you know, I see it the same way as, okay, I was being operated. They may have been doing something to save my life, for all I know.
Right.
But I describe it that way because that's how other people perceive it when it happens to them, that they were taken by these evil beings against their permission, you know. But it's only because of the world view of what a violent abduction would be like is why I call it that.
Okay. And I mean, that's good because, and that's always been a thing that I ask people all the time because, I mean, because it really, I guess, interests me, but shocks me at the same time that people feel this way, because I know that, you know, a lot of people who I have talked to that, you know, don't have, you know, bad experiences or whatever, and they're given information, that a lot of these people are scientists, you know, a lot of these different beings are different scientists and stuff like that, or doctors and stuff, and they're here doing research.
Yes.
And so if they're trying to create a different race or a better race or help their own race with their immune systems or whatever, obviously, you know, and I think that it's probably more for hybrids and stuff, but no matter what it's for, you know, it's still medical procedures. And I think that it's, like you said, it's in our brain that if it's, we're not asked our permission and it's granted, that it's somehow something very bad, evil.
Yes. Yes.
But I don't really see anything that points to that.
Right. And, you know, we do the same things as people, you know, whether it be to animals, insects, or even our own children. Our own children don't want to be taken to the hospital and have their blood drawn or get shots, but we make them do these things, you know.
We brush our animals, like our cows and stuff, so that we know that they're ours. We take a hot branding iron and sear it into their skin. But, you know, we think that, oh, well, you know, it doesn't hurt them that much, and, you know, or it'll be all right. But, I mean, how do we know? If we were a cow, would we want that done to us?
Exactly. I mean, we're tagging bald eagles and putting braces and tags on sharks and dolphins. They don't want those things on them, but we say, oh, we're doing it for their good because we want them to populate. They're endangered, you know? So if you look at it from that perspective, we are endangered, you know, and they're probably tagging us the same way. Okay, we need to monitor these. There's, you know, for one, from what I've learned over the past few years, is that there are several species out there. People always refer to beings as the Greys or the aliens that are coming, or are these ships here? What are they here for? There's no one. There's actually quite a few. And I've actually dealt with a few different species.
So it's kind of no different, really, than like with us. We're not different species, but we have different races of people. So it's very similar to that. I mean, it always is shocks me of how people can think that, you know, we could be the only people in the whole wide world universe, you know, that is out there. Real quick, we have a question, another one for you. Somebody's asking, after writing your book, were you afraid of any kind of repercussions from the ones that took you, that abducted you?
No, I was actually given a message that I need to pass along certain information that they were telling me. So I had this one experience where the being said, and I'm going to quote it the way that he said it, because it really didn't make much sense to me. I'm still trying to figure out what he meant, but I believe he was telling me to get my information out there. He said, get abound, prove forward, like prove, P-R-O-V-E. Like I would say prove, but he said get abound, prove forward, because I was asking the same question, because there was a period of my life to where I could actually meditate before I would fall asleep and get in contact with this particular being and ask any question I want, and that being would give me an answer. And this is what happened this one night. I'm like, should I write this book because Seth Shostak is telling me he doesn't want my information that I'm trying to give him? You know, Seth, he's the director of SETI out here in California, in Northern California, and he said he did not want me, he would not use my information unless I was published. I did not want to write a book. So I was stuck. So this experience happened where this being said, get a bound, pro forward. You know, I was asking, should I do it? It was pretty much saying, yes, do it. We want you to know where we are, why we're here. Hello?
Hi, Ben.
Yes.
We're expecting to keep work. Hi, everybody. It's Tiffany, the producer. We're experiencing a little bit of technical difficulty. I think we lost our wonderful host for a moment. But we're going to keep going. So if you want to go ahead and continue to talk about what you were just talking about and, you know, more about your book or whatever, we'd love to hear more about it.
Okay. I'm not sure where we left off at. Where did we get cut off at, so I can continue from there? Or should we just start over from...
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. Maybe can you embellish a little bit more about why do you think they felt it was important for you to tell your story?
Well, it's kind of a difficult answer, because a lot of people think that there's this world-saving view on things of why they're contacting us. Sometimes they just need certain people to filter information out there just to keep the talk going, to let them know that we're doing our planet wrong, we're doing our race wrong. If we keep heading the direction that we're heading, this is going to happen, you know, whether it be the ozone layer or some great catastrophe or whatever it may be. They just want individuals out there to know that they're there and that they're trying to give us help, but they can't come and, you know, in mass. They're not going to land on the White House lawn, because that wouldn't be helping us.
Right.
You know, so it's just, you know, a lot of people experience this, but they really don't know, or they don't know how to talk about it. They don't know how to interpret things. So I don't feel as though I'm anybody special of, you know, as far as this happening to. Mm-hmm. I just feel as though, you know, I just wanted to come out with it, you know, because it was happening so much, right. You know. So there's, you know, there's no real easy answer. You know, there's one set of beings that would like to see us as slaves. There's another set of beings, you know, that are actually the same race as them that says, no, we don't want them as slaves. It's kind of like Democrats and Republicans fighting. Uh-huh. There's different beings that have different agendas. So there's really no easy way to answer that.
And that's totally understandable. I mean, with a subject like this, I mean, the subject matter is such a tender one. Why do you think they chose you? I know you said you're nobody specifically special, which I think we're all very special, but why do you think they chose you to to convey this message?
Well, it might be a generational thing, because from what I was told was my mother was the same way that I am, but I never knew this because I lost contact with her when I was 5 years old. Nobody's heard from her since. Oh. And my aunt explained to me that she planned on disappearing or leaving one day. I don't know what I never knew what she meant by that, but she said that none of us would ever hear from her again. You know, nobody's found a body or anything like that. But she was, you know, she believed that she was a contactee or a walk-in or, you know, something to that measure. She felt as though that she was a hybrid, or, you know, maybe it's because I'm her child and, you know, I could be a starseed. I don't know. But I know that many of us are. We just don't realize it. You know, we all probably come from somewhere, you know, somewhere else, you know, if you go back far enough. But, you know, that's really not an easy answer. I don't feel as though that they chose me. I think they choose a lot of people, and I just actually happens to be one of the people that heard them calling, you know? Some people don't choose to answer the phone when someone calls, or they ignore it. I didn't ignore it.
Right. You know, and I think in a way that's good, because, you know, sometimes if you fight something, it could be more dangerous than not.
Right.
Hello, I'm sorry, everybody. Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's completely okay. She's back, everybody.
Now, you are the bomb, Tiffany. Thank you so much for taking over. Oh, I was panicking.
You got it. Our wonderful host is back. We now continue our regularly scheduled program.
Thank you. So sorry, Benjamin. I get my new phone on hopefully Saturday or by Monday morning, and I will not have these problems anymore. But I appreciate you for being patient. And once again, thank you so much, Tiffany, for jumping in and saving the day.
So, yeah, I have a feeling your new phone isn't going to be any better, because when you have these powers, your electronics seem to kind of go bonkers on you. Mine's do the same thing.
Yeah, this is like the fifth phone I've had, and I swear it makes no difference. Whenever I seem to be doing my shows, like the phone works and the internet works perfectly without any glitches until it's time to do my show and talk about these topics, and then, yeah, of course, all hell breaks loose. But, you know, I am definitely, well, I got this new thing where it's kind of like the satellite internet and stuff like that, where you put it in the USB of your laptop, and you can get service anywhere.
Yes.
I'm changing over to that instead of just using my phone. I'm getting a new phone too, but in order to kind of fix this. But yes, this is like my sixth phone that I've blown up. It's crazy. So I'm glad you experienced that too.
Oh, yes. I just lost the phone. Well, not lost it, but my phone just went bonkers. And then my daughter's Nabby went bonkers. And for a couple of days, everything I seemed to touch just seemed to go bonkers on me. So I just got her Nabby fixed. I just got my computer fixed. And my phone is still out. But luckily, I have a backup.
Well, there you go. Well, all right. So I do apologize. And I'm glad that she was able to save the day. So I'm not sure where what you guys were talking about right before I got back on air, but I can go kind of take it from there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we kind of picked up where, I don't know exactly where we left off, but we were pretty much talking about, you know, the why she asked me, why do I feel as though I was chosen? And I was explaining, I don't think I was chosen. It's more so that I just actually happened to hear them calling, you know.
Right.
And I was talking about why did I choose, I think the last question you asked was, why did I choose to write the book? And my answer to that was, no one takes you seriously as far as, like, the, you know, professionals like Seth Shostak of SETI or anybody like that. You know, the emails that we exchange are actually in the book, where he said he wouldn't listen to my information unless I became published. A lot of people ask, well, why does somebody write a book? I don't want to listen to them, because all they're trying to do is sell a book. No, I prove in my book, I have the email saying I will not listen to your information unless you become published. They don't respect you until you're published. You know,
that's
until you.
True.
So,
yeah, that's...
And that conversation is in my book. You know, I didn't want to try to sell books. I was doing just fine without the book, you know.
Right.
After I came out with the book is when things, you know, got a little bad for me, you know, so.
And I think that was one of the, you know, one of the questions that came across was that, you know, had you had any repercussions like from those that have abducted you because you wrote the book, but it sounds like you didn't have any repercussions from them, but you've had repercussions like from other people, right?
From everyone else around me. You know, it gets into the whole conspiracy. I've had, you know, emails that I tried to email people and they would not go through, you know. I know I tried to tell a story about Tupac, about what I knew about that whole incident, and I put it on Facebook, and then I went back to Facebook, and the part of it that most people didn't know that was kept out of the, you know, media, that part got erased, you know. So certain things, you know, when they don't want you to know, they will find a way to, you know, they don't want the public to know, they will find a way to delete that information. You know, I'm like, they actually hacked my Facebook page and erased this half of the story, you know, and I try to put it back up and it won't go back up, you know, so it's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it is weird, but in another way, it's not weird. And I hope that a lot of my listeners are listening, or for others that, you know, end up downloading and listen to it later, because a lot of people in these fields, whether it's paranormal or the UFO, are telling me, reporting the exact same thing, that, you know, they put certain things up, whether it be about things with space or you know, different worlds or, you know, different crafts or even paranormal stuff. And then all of a sudden it mysteriously, you know, is deleted. And then they'll put it back up and, you know, things. And I've had it myself happen.
Right.
And people will say, oh, it's just a glitch with Facebook. But I've put stuff out on other sites.
Right.
And it's happened as well.
Yes.
So, yes, you know, there is a lot. And what I notice is that the people that are putting stuff out that I feel is maybe there's no importance behind it, or it's maybe not completely true, or things like that. Like, I see all that stuff up all the time. But then, yes, I see certain things that people put up that I know is like, wow, this is some like groundbreaking stuff for the people who understand this.
Yes.
And lo and behold, that is the stuff that disappears, or they start having problems, you know, and it always seems like the people that they target are the people that, you know, really do have important information that they,
yes,
don't want out.
Yes. And now, as far as like, there's, you know, the information as far as like what they wanted me to share, it's nothing much different from what you hear other people saying as far as like where our world is headed, but it goes a little bit deeper. I know I wanted to get into talking about the evidence that was left behind, you know, from a couple of my abductions. I'll talk about what happened in 2010.
Okay.
It was a dream that I was having, which, you know, it was more so like a, I don't want to say a dream. I was being shown a vision, and I was in a desert area. I would like to say Egypt, but I really don't know where I was. I just know there was nothing but desert around and rolling sand hills. And I was being chased by some people that were, you know, firing, you know, primitive type weapons at me. And next thing you know, I get to this oasis. It's a perfectly round lake. I dive in, and there's like people running behind me that were like following me. I must have been their leader in this vision. I don't know. I dive into the water, you know, to escape from my life, and I'm swimming down, and I'm running out of air, and this voice comes in. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And they said, you are a descendant of Mansu. You will know what to do when you get to the bottom. And I'm like, okay, wow, that's strange. So I get to the bottom, and I'm banging on the bottom of the, this is about 30 feet down, and I'm banging on the ground, the bottom of this lake bed, saying, I'm a descendant of Mansu. Let me in. I look around me, and it's like nothing but a perfectly cylindrical glass encasing, and I could see these Egyptian people on the other side of this, you know, casing just looking at me like smiling. Next thing you know, I wake up, and I'm like, Mansu, who, you know, I never even heard of this name, you know. So I started looking up on the internet, Mansu, and all I get is like this ride that's in, you know, Six Flags called Mansu or something like that. But finally, I come across that Mansu was, you know, Mansu Hotep, you know, and he was like the Egyptian god of war or something like that. So I'm like, wow, that's strange, you know. So that was like a revealing thing to me. And so I started having these, like, these type of experiences, like, every night. And so that's when I said, I'm going to start asking questions and find out what these visions mean. So
right.
one of the sequences that happened was I'm floating out from the earth. This is like the first time to where I was like voluntarily, you know, like taken. And it's like in the book of Ezekiel, they describe, you know, seeing the round of the earth as he, you know, went through the sky. I don't know the exact wording, but I could see the round of the earth, and I'm leaving the earth, and I'm inside of a ship. And I, for some reason, I couldn't see anybody behind me, but I can hear them. I can hear these beings talking, you know, through mental telepathy. But I didn't have the urge to turn around to see them. Next thing you know, we're approaching this binary planetary system, and we're on the surface. We just beam. I don't know how we get there, but we're on the surface of one. And they take me down this long path out of this structure, and they're showing me the different things. Actually, I skipped one of the stories, but this is the second sequence that happened. They're showing me these things, and this is village. There were these bluish gray people. Their eyes were somewhat similar to ours. They were just a little bit larger. They had long braided, I'd like to say fishtail type braids in their hair. Some of them just kept their hair long and straight, but they were like 5 feet 5, very stocky beings. And they were surrounding these tall, I say anywhere between 9 feet and 12 feet, African looking beings. And it was a primitive looking village. There was nothing high tech about this place.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so I'm giving a tour, and there's things that happen. I'm not going to get into too much detail because we don't have a lot of time. But on our journey home, I asked, where are you? Where is this located? Where are you? They said, we are on the other side of your sun at this moment. Now, this is June of 2010, I believe. So, you know, I pull out the star maps and all this and trying to figure out where they are, Google Maps. And this is the information that I gave to Seth Shostak as far as the constellation that was there at the moment. I'm telling him the region of space that they said they were in, and that's when he was telling me, oh, we get, you know, 8 emails every week about this, and I can't take it seriously unless you were published and all that. So I tell him pretty much exactly where to look and that they're looking the wrong way. You know, they're looking for radio signals and all kind of stuff. And I said, no, they're contacting – you need to look at what people are telling you. They're not contacting you through radio signals. They're contacting you through people, you know. So
right.
next thing you know, they, you know, a few months later, CNN is announcing that they find for the first time ever, the first Earth-like planetary system, you know. So I emailed Seth, and I said, NASA beat you to it. He said, no, NASA didn't necessarily beat us to it. We have about 10 people – from SETI that works with NASA at the Kepler Observatory. So he admitted that he was part of finding this, you know? So I started doing research as far as when they started looking. They started looking 2 months after I gave them the information in the exact region of space that I told them to look.
And do you think that maybe, you know, so obviously it had something to do with it, but if he's saying that he's getting that many emails a week about that same area and same location, do you think that, you know, maybe they were getting just so many random people that were give, because to me, to give specific locations in the solar system. Now, if you're not like an astronomer or, you know, like somebody, because I couldn't tell you where anything is. I barely can find the, you know, the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, and that's only because it was shown to me. So for people to know specific locations, you know, out, you know, our star system, to a specific point, and then that most people wouldn't know, and then you're getting multiple people sending you these emails, you know, and messages. Do you think that maybe enough people were saying that they were trying to blow these people off, like, no, you don't have anything, but they knew that possibly that there was something because so many people were now pointing them that way?
That's definitely what I think happened. You know, after, you know, I was probably the needle or the straw that broke the camel's back. They probably said, wait, there's something to this, you know, because if you read the email conversation in the book, you'll see that I was struggling with what I was trying to tell him, you know, because our conversation spanned over maybe almost a year and a half period of time. So he could probably tell that I was stressed about it. And then I finally said, look, well, I told you, I got this off my chest, you know, my job is done, you know. So he probably did, you know, take heed to what I was saying as far as the form of contact of what they were doing to try to get in contact with us wasn't radio. It was probably, you know, they probably realized at that moment, okay, well, if there's anything to this, since we're looking in random places anyways, let's just look over here just to, you know, get this off of my mind. And lo and behold, they find the first planetary system. They find, I believe, 11 or 12 more after that that are likely that are in the Goldilocks zone, you know, that likely have water and all that that can support intelligent life. Not just any planet. They found hundreds of planets. You know, they found many solar systems, you know, thousands, you know, literally. But they found about 11 or 12 that are in the Goldilocks zone starting in 2010, months after I contact them.
That is
been, yeah, so that's a little bit beyond coincidence. So, you know, there's different messages that they've given me, you know, and when I say they, there's this one being in particular, and I'm not sure who they are, what they look like, because they refuse to show me their face. And I think maybe they don't want to show me because maybe they are the Greys and they don't want me to know that they're the ones that, you know, abducted me in 1996 when I was 22. And they don't want to scare me, you know? They were pretty scary looking.
Okay. So, but once again, are they scary looking because of what you've been programmed to believe is you know, good looking? Like, you know how we think that, you know, if you're a beautiful person, that means you're tall and thin and you got the perfect body and no, you know.
Well, you know, when I say scary looking, it's more so like even if I see a beautiful woman and I see her one day and she's beautiful and then I see her when she's mad, she looks scary. That's what I mean by scary. It's like they were intense. They were very intense. You know, they served a purpose and they didn't play. You know, they were there to do what they were there to do to me or for me and nothing else. There was no joking, no bones about it. You know, so that's what I mean by scary. You know, I can be a scary person when I'm upset, but I like to consider myself very attractive. So that's what I mean by scary.
Okay, well, good. I just wanted to clarify that because, you know, once again, it's like you say scary and then right away people's, you know, minds go to like, you know, scary movies and stuff like where they've got these, you know, crazy things where a second mouth opens and comes and gets you or something, you know, like that. That's what most people. Before we go on from there, we've got another message, and this is actually off of Facebook. And this may, you know, go into farther down the story, but they're asking that when you were abducted, were you ever used to help procreate for their species?
Yes. And the last experience I just told you about with the bluish gray beings, I don't want to be too graphic. I don't know how graphic I can be on here. Let me know. Yes, that did happen.
I don't remember under any.
Sorry. Say that again.
I do want to get into that, you know, area of the story, but let's save that just for a minute. And right here, I just got the message from the network. They said you can be as graphic as you want. This is the truth, and we want people to know the truth. So whatever it is, like we don't have, there's no guidelines or anything of what we can or cannot say. You don't have to hold back. We want things the way they happen. I want to let you finish your story, you know, where we were just at. But that is a big thing right now, not only, you know, for me, but for many people who are listening. So, you know, so everybody and whoever asked that question, we will definitely get into that. I know that's a big, big topic for everybody. But once again, if anybody has any questions or comments, you know, you do not have to just put them in the chat room. You know, you're more than welcome to call in and ask them. The phone number is 818-341-8214. Okay, so you were back to the other part of it where this being this kind of more, not, well, we said scary, but more forceful type, you know, no jokes about it, got species comes, and what was their purpose?
Well, they seem to be like a lot of people say the slave race or the workforce of the, you know, I didn't use any of these terms in the book because I never even heard of these things until after they started happening to me. But people refer to them to as the Anunnaki and the Phylum, as far as, you know, if you look at the region of space they said they were
right.
at and the description of them. I have reason to believe that this is what people are talking about. But the Greys, I believe, work for them or with them. I really don't know. This is something that, you know, I would like to ask and get an answer to. That's one of the answers that I've never really been given fully. But on this planetary system, there's four different species, and I believe that one of them are human, just like us, and other humans from different solar systems that look just like us. When I say just like us, I'm talking about, you know, there's Caucasian, there's Asian, there's Black. You know, there's different races that are identical to us. Then there's the tall, the 10-foot tall beings, and then there's the short 5.5-foot beings, and they both live on these two different binary planets that are like, they're right next to each other. So the Greys, I'm not sure if they're on that planet also, because I didn't see them on this planet. I just saw the human, you know, the ones that look like Earthlings. I saw the bluish Greys, and then I saw the tall African looking 10-foot tall beings. So, but I never would see the ones that were transporting me. I think they use them to do their dirty work. I'm not sure. Okay. I don't even know if the Greys are the ones that are in control or whether they're the slave species. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, you only get given a certain amount of information as well, and it's actually kind of amazing that, you know, you have had interaction and experiences with multiple different, you know, species.
Right.
So can we go over them again? So how many different species have you interacted with at this point?
Well, at that point, there were the four. You know,
okay.
I had an interaction just 2 weeks ago with another one because I saw a program on I saw a video on YouTube, and they were talking about this little, I guess, about 4 or 5 inch being a skeletal body of a being. And
yes.
I'm like, wow, I wonder if that's real. You know, that was like really on my mind.
Uh-huh.
So the same species, the ones that won't show themselves to me, answered my question for me and introduced me to this being. This sounds crazy, but this happened. I almost don't even want to talk about it. It's so weird because I'm still trying to vet it, but I'll just go on and talk about it. So
and I was going to say that. Please, you know, and you know that it is important. The one thing is here. You know, we've got a lot of people that this is what they want to hear. They're not going to think you're crazy. In fact, if you can find a better show, you know, where you will get support, you know, this, you know, here it is. So don't feel that way at all. I was actually, when I saw the picture of that little alien that you're talking about,
yes.
I was very, very, very drawn to it from the moment that it happened.
Yes.
And which is very, very crazy. But, you know, and we've actually got a question, and they were saying, of all of the different species that you have met, which one treated you the best?
Oh, I actually see that the ones that treated me the best were the it's hard to say. It was when I was taken to one of the, you know, like I said, it was a binary planetary system, and these beings stayed on both different systems. The ones where there was nothing but humans there, you know, they showed me how they lived, you know, how there was no monetary system, how we need to develop the same thing in order to be on their level as far as being a species that can communicate back and forth with them. They took me to where they, you know, they fed at, they had parks, you know, they held hands like we did. Everybody was just happy. You know, I can't say one treated me better than the other, but that was just the best experience that I had. You know, I actually ate. You know, I can remember the flavors of the food. You know, when I came back, I was full. You know, so it's hard to say.
So there were other people. You know, so did they look like us, or they look like their race? Right.
No, they look like us, and it was told to me that many of these people are from Earth. They just chose to stay. You can choose to stay too.
Gotcha. Okay,
yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense, because with, you know, the past life regression that people go through and stuff, and they're able to remember these alternate lives, and people always wonder, like, oh, you know, if you went to traditional, you know, like Catholic religion or whatever, that, you know, when you die, you either go to heaven or hell, and, you know, or you're stuck in between in purgatory, you know. So, and then you hear other people that say, you know, when you hear about like walk-ins and all the different things, there's so many different theories. But I have heard over and over that, you know, then when you do pass, you have that option to either
right.
then go back and live again, and you'll be, you know, go back, or you can choose to stay, which was, for me, right. was very interesting because, you know, I would ask, well, where were you? Where are you actually staying? And nobody could really tell. Nobody's ever given me, like, the answers and the descriptions that you have of being able to actually travel these places, see these places, you know, that they do have these people, you know, even though they look human, they are there. And a big piece of the puzzle is that they're holding hands and stuff, so they have emotions. So obviously they are, you know, they have humans. Because one thing is they're saying a lot of the species don't have a lot of the human traits that we do.
Right.
Of, like, passion and love and all of these different things. So that's very interesting. So
right.
and back to the little one.
Yes.
So you have this, you think about this, and then you go and you have this dream. And so what happens with this?
Yes, this was really weird. Okay, so I asked, you know, this was like really heavily on my mind, and whenever something's heavy on my mind like that, and I meditate and try to connect, and I can't teach people how to do this. You know, this like takes years and years and years of experience of learning how to, you know, communicate. I mean, it just gets deep. But when I communicate with this particular being who said I can contact them anytime I need to, I felt the need to. So next thing you know, I don't know where we're at. It just felt like we were on the surface of the moon the way it looked. I honestly don't know where this meeting took place, but it was not far from Earth. It wasn't on Earth. And it was like, okay, we pull up on the ship, and we beam. I don't know whether we beam, but next thing you know, we appear on the surface of wherever we were, and there was this real small sphere. You know, a lot of people have a lot of people talk about they see spheres and all of that. It was this real. It was a metallic sphere, and part of the sphere turned into glass, while the rest of it stayed looking metallic. And out of this sphere came a being, and this was green. It was green. And I'm like, okay, little green men, whatever, you know. But it was green, and it had the little crest going down the middle of the head, just like the one in the picture. And this was just the friendliest little thing. It looked scary in the picture. The way they made it look like a tiny little demon. This thing smiled. It was really friendly. It grabbed my finger and was showing me what their fingers looked like. And it was like a, you know, three fingers, this particular being. I'm not sure if the one in the picture had more than three fingers, but all I saw was three fingers. And they had like little suction cups in the middle. And it was just, it did not talk to me. I don't think the thing can talk. It didn't share any thoughts with me. I couldn't read its mind. There was no communication. Everything was visual. And it was just like pretty much like standing there and turning and touching me, you know, just showing me, look, this is what I look like. I'm not evil, you know, pretty much like I'm a friendly little guy. You know, I mean you no harm. You know, I'm real. And right. it went back inside of his sphere, and the sphere closed back up. And then next thing you know, I'm taken back here.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
So that was just a couple of weeks ago. And I'm still kind of drawn back over that. I'm still trying to figure out, okay, could this have been a dream? I need a confirmation, you know. So I'm still mm-hmm. waiting on that confirmation. But that was the experience that I last had, and it seemed very real to me.
Right. Well, and the thing is, it's like this is not the first time that you've had situations like this happen. So, you know, you kind of can almost decipher, you know, at the beginning, well, okay, this is much different than my regular dreams. You
right,
know,
exactly.
And certain ones
yeah.
are usually, so you know, are able to do that. All right, so it looks like we've got about 40 minutes. So I want to get into the whole
the
procreation
breeding.
And children and the breeding and all of this. So
yes.
It's something, like I said, is a very, very interesting and fascinating topic. I get questions on this all the time. I have interviewed probably at least a few hundred people who have reported to have been abducted and, you know, either had eggs or sperm taken from them. And then they would be abducted, you know, multiple times and taken basically into a room with children where the children looked very much like them, but you could definitely tell that they were not fully human children.
Right.
So let's start from there. So where did it start? Like, how did it start?
Okay, I have to start a little bit before that.
Sure.
Now, if there's any children listening, or, you know, you might, I mean, it's not that graphic, but it's going to get pretty detailed. As you know, most boys, you know, you have wet dreams as a child, you know, to where, you know, and you wake up and your underwear are wet, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Because you had dreams that you were doing stuff. That stopped for me as a teenager. I hadn't had one of those type of dreams to where I actually copulated in my pants since I was a teenager. You know, you have the dream as an adult, but you always wake up before anything happens. You know, and it's rather frustrating. Okay, so this was, what year was this? This was during, you know, during that experience with the bluish grays, where they were taking me into, this was like by a shoreline, you know, when I said, you know, they were around the tall African, the 10-foot tall guy, and the rest of them were the bluish grays, and they were kind of like escorting him. They were escorting me also, and the town was very old Wild West looking. You would think that you go to another planet that were advanced species, that everything would just be high tech. It looked like an old Wild Western town, storefront type buildings. And I was taken into this one building, very small. It would remind you of like a cigarette shop or a jail. And I say jail because when I went in, I looked to my right, immediately ahead of me, there were these bars, like prison bars. And it was in an L-shaped formation. And then I looked to the left, and there's more prison bars. And there were a couple of the bluish, I'll just go on and give them the name and say Anunnaki, I don't know.
Okay.
They were females, and they were sitting on the bench in front of the bar. As soon as you walk in and look straight ahead, they were sitting there. One of them stood up and took my hand, took me behind the bars that were perpendicular, and I don't know why or how, we just immediately made it in front of everybody.
So you didn't even care that other people were there. You guys just start having sex, right?
There was no thought behind it. I don't, you know, it's, you know, I'm not that type of person to just do that with anybody. But that was my purpose at the time, and I knew it. Somehow I knew it.
Okay.
And, you know, I was put at ease. She smiled. And I was given this little tube and what I, you know, like tissue, like a, you know, like almost like tissue like what we use. It was just a little bit different. To where I had to collect it and put it into the jar and cap the jar off and hand it to the woman, and that's what happened.
Okay.
You know, I went through the whole process of actually having ejaculated, but and collecting the samples and putting it into the jar myself and handing it off, and then I was escorted out of the place and taken back here. Now, every time you're taken back, you have the experience of like you're waking up. You know, now I wake up and my underwear are not wet, you know, and if you have a wet dream like that, you always have the wet, you know, the wet part of it. I'm like, okay, where did my semen go? It was obviously collected just like I remember, you know, so that was my experience with that. I've never actually been taken into a room to visit with any children that may have been mine, but I've always wondered what did they do with that semen, you know, that the overspill of, you know, the whatever, you know, I've always wondered about that. So it seemed my story seems a little bit different than most others as far as how the, you know, I hear a lot of people say they were violated and their semen was taken from them. That wasn't my experience.
Okay. Well, see, that just shows that how many variances of, you know, different encounters with these things can be. It's obviously, we know it's not always, you know, violent. It's not always something bad. You have been given information. Now, you know, for the information wise, I mean, what have the majority of the messages been that you're supposed to come back and give to humanity?
Yes. There's a number of there's never been like an end of the world scenario. You know, people always talked about the 2012 or whatever, stuff like that. Now, there have been a couple of catastrophes that I was shown to where they said there will be a catastrophe in the future. Not everybody's going to die. It's not going to be like, you know, a meteor striking the earth and nobody surviving. But it was pretty much showing me what to do and what we can eat and what we need to stay away from when it does happen, if we don't save ourselves from it happening, because we seem to be destroying ourselves. I have a feeling that it might be some kind of radiation, because they told me that we would have to start growing this hybrid food. They showed me what to grow. I don't know. I still don't know how to grow it, but they showed me what we'll be eating and what we can't eat. One of the things that we could eat, they showed me, was clam. They said that would be our only source of protein that wasn't contaminated. I later find out, okay, why a clam and why not an oyster or a mussel? And I look up on the internet, it's because clams dig under the sand. You know, so I said, oh, so maybe there's going to be some type of radiation. And they gave me this, it was like a potato. It was a red potato. It was perfectly mixed with the onion. You couldn't tell. There was no dominance. You know, if you wanted to taste onion, you tasted onion. If you wanted to taste potato, it tasted like potato. You know, and it had the consistency of both. It was starchy and crunchy. It was really weird. And then there was this other thing. It was kind of reminded me of sugar cane, the way it tasted, but it had the consistency of celery and carrot. It had the taste of all three blended in one. And that was pretty much the staple food, what they showed me that everybody would be eating for a long time after this catastrophe. So this was another instance where I tasted it, and, you know, I woke up with the taste in my mouth and all of that. So, you know, it's pretty much a lot. You know, the message they're pretty much giving us is we need to be one. This gets into the Illuminati part. You know, this is why I titled the book Alien Illuminati. People immediately wrongfully think of the Illuminati as far as like government and politics, and that's really not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about why they call themselves the Illuminati and who they're modeling themselves after. You know, I always tell people there's 13 levels above the 33 levels of Masonry, you know, and that's who I'm talking about. You know, they're saying that in order for us to thrive as a species, we must become one. And that's where the New World Order comes in, you know, and what they interpret and what they're trying to do, even though they're trying to do it, go about it the wrong way. You know, they're saying we need to get along with each other as one species before we can advance to the next level, because what we're doing now is we're destroying ourselves, and it's almost too late. You know, there's almost a point of no return to where we're, you know, at the point to where we're going to create something that's going to pretty much wipe the majority of the people off of this earth. And those are the messages that they are conveying. They don't say when. And anybody that ever comes out and says, oh, this is going to be the date, the end of the world, this meteor is coming around and it's going to wipe us all out. We're actually being protected from these natural disasters coming from space. We don't have to worry about any meteors coming and hitting us. They're not letting that happen right now. This is what I do know is this one particular species, they fight with each other, not like physically, but, you know, like I say, the Democrats and Republicans, it's this one faction that want us to wipe ourselves out so we can start over, so that they can, you know, so that we can just start off fresh. And there's another one that says, no, give them a chance. And so there was an agreement that was made that they would give us a chance up until a certain moment to where we can try to solve our own problem, until the point to where they say, oh, you know what, we're not going to protect them anymore. We're just going to let whatever happens happen. You know, so we're pretty much using up our chances, and that's the message that they really want out there. They want us to know where they're at, but they're not going to show up on the White House lawn. You know, there are certain species that do work with our government. You know, that's been shown to me. They're not all the same species, you know. I used to think that there was just one species, but there's several, you know, and they all have different agendas.
I absolutely believe that. Now, you know, you say that there are some that you've been shown that are working with the government. You know, have you been shown, or do you know if, you know, a lot of these things like Area 51, the underground bases and stuff like that, are those where they're working with the government at?
to be honest with you, when I say they've shown me, it's more so like given images.
Just the information.
Yeah, just images and information. You know, they don't get into detail, you know, about, okay, these people are here working at Area 51, but they do confirm that, you know, there has been beings here working with our government, and there are beings still here working with our government, and many of them are not them. Do not, you know, they're saying do not confuse us with them because we are not them.
Okay.
So okay, they are good and bad, and they're letting us know that we are the good ones. Those are the bad ones, you know. So that they won't say which, you know, they don't get into great detail. But it sounds weird, but they do share this information with me. Don't get us confused. Which, you know what, it kind of brings up that one crop circle, which I used to think was fake. And it shows, like, the picture of the alien head holding a disc,
yes,
and it gives a message.
Yes.
It pretty much said the same thing as that. And I'm like, wow, that message that that one guy decoded, the binary code within there, I'm like, that's pretty much what they've been telling me. You know?
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. That is, oh, this is some amazing stuff. Now, we did have a question, but so, well, you haven't seen any of your offspring, but have you seen any, you know, hybrid children? Have they ever shown you any hybrid children at all?
No. No, I can honestly say I haven't experienced that. And the only thing that I've seen was like when they take me to the planetary system, they show me the life on those, you know, on those particular planets. Now I do, and I know we only have about a half an hour left. I'd like to get into like the physical evidence left behind and a couple of the more other stories that had nothing to do with dreams, as far as what appeared to me in front of my very own eyes, as like, you know, how I'm talking to you or talk to somebody in this realm. You know, I'd like to get into some of that.
Sure. Before we go into that, because I do want to go into that, before we go, we have one more question about, I don't know if you saw the video that was out there, you know, what made a big, you know, storm on the internet was picture of Obama's security guy that shape-shifted into the alien. Do you have any information on that or any opinion?
I haven't. Excuse me. I'm over here choking on my own water. I don't have any information on that. I do have a strong opinion that it's, you know, that's one of those stories to where people make it out to something that it really isn't. I don't think he has any shape-shifting bodyguard alien protecting him. I don't think that. I may be wrong because I've been proven wrong on other things. When I say, oh, no, that's not real, and it turns out to be something real, I don't give too much credence to that story. I saw the video, and I watched it several times, and I don't see anything strange there, to be honest. If you really look into it, you know, it just looks like a guy, and then, you know, image gets a little bit distorted. You know, just as if you were to focus on anybody else, you can find some kind of distortion. I'd really have to look further into that. But, you know, I don't have any information on that.
Right. And as you said, you know, I mean, there have been things where you thought wasn't the case and it was. I mean, you're still learning yourself. I mean, I'm not expecting you to know every answer or anything like that. It's just my own. Somebody had a question and I thought that was a good one at least to ask. All right. So let's get into your, you know, the evidence and things like that.
Yes. Okay. This first one started out as a dream. It was a whole sequence of dreams. And then I had a few premonitions, which actually ended up becoming true. A lot of times my psychic dreams come from, you know, when I'm taken somewhere. You know, I think they go hand in hand. You know, it has something to do with time, space, folding or whatever. I don't know. But I have lots of psychic dreams whenever I'm taken or contacted. But during one of these contacts, I remember them saying, you're the eighth one. And I wake up from this experience, and I'm in the restroom, and the back of my left leg is like burning and sore. And I rub it. I'm like, something is back here. And I, you know, I'm trying to look behind my leg, and it's kind of hard to see. So then I take my phone and I take a picture of it because I couldn't see it just, you know, with my own eyes because of the location. I could just see part of it, and it was a bruise And if you go to my website, thealienilluminati.com, on the homepage, if you scroll all the way down, you'll see the picture, along with another picture. You'll see it's the number 8. Lori McDonald suggested that it could be the infinity sign. It might be, but I think it's the number 8. You know, just like that. You know, just like what was told to me. And it has little slits in the middle, and it's like an inverted bruise. I'm like, bruises don't occur that way. You know, so you'd have to see it to know what I'm talking about. So that was like a piece of physical evidence that was left behind on me. And then one day, I was sitting on my couch watching a television program. I was wide awake. I wasn't tired. Next thing you know, I'm waking up. I'm like, you know, when did I pass out? I look on my phone. You know, when your phone is timed out, it's just a blank screen. It's like somebody had drawn a picture on my phone with their fingers. And it's a picture of an alien, like an alien looking at me. And that picture is also on my website if you would like to go and see what I'm talking about. And my phone was positioned so that as soon as I wake up, that's the first thing I would see. I didn't even touch the phone. I always have two phones. I grabbed my backup phone, and I took a picture of it. And it's an image just like the alien crop circle holding the disc. It's pretty much just like that, looking at me from an angle. And I tried duplicating that. You know, like, did I do this subconsciously somehow? I could not do that. You know, so if you go on my website, you'll also see that picture. So, yeah, those were the two things that was, yes?
If you want, Benjamin, you can also, in the chat room, you can put the link to that page. So then that way people have it, and then they can, you know, go directly to it and check some of this stuff out while they're listening as well.
Okay, y'all have to finish registering.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll put it on my page. I'll have it up on my page.
Okay, and I'll do it after also because I couldn't, you know, I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, I'm afraid I'd miss something you'd say if I do that.
But, sure, not a problem.
Yeah, so there were also a couple of experiences that I had. You know, a lot of times when you deal with paranormal or abduction, a lot of it is spiritual and you're taken outside of your body. You know, not everything is done physically as we know it, but sometimes things are done physically as we know it. And one of the experiences that I had was, which one do I want to talk about first? The Thanksgiving 2010. I'm at my uncle's house. A lot of us are there. And when we go there, we have to spend the night because the roads are dangerous. It's in a mountainous area, and there's steep drop-offs, and it's slippery, so nobody drives at night over there during that time of the year. So I wake up, and I look on his back porch, and I see a fire. It looked like a fire rising out of the ground. I'm like, wow, there's a fire, and it started getting bigger and bigger. Mind you, I never went to sleep after this, so this wasn't a dream. And it just got bigger and bigger. Then I approached the screen door. I'm like, that's not a fire. And this light just got, you know, it was like waving. It just kept growing until it was probably about 8-foot diameter, maybe a little bit bigger. And it just rose up in the air and flew off. So I'm like, okay, now that is strange. And I'm scared at this point. Like, what was that? You know, was that a spirit or was that a ship? I don't know. It looked like it was living at the same time. It looked like it was a craft. I don't know what it was. So I stayed up all night. You know, I did not go back to sleep after that. You know, so I experienced something just like that later on, about a year after that, at my apartment in Modesto, when I lived in Modesto at the time. And I'm laying on the couch. My daughter was sleeping in my room because her room is filled with toys. And I hear somebody walking back and forth behind me and touching my head. So I'm like, okay, that's Anastasia. That's my daughter's name. She's playing with me. It's early in the morning, and she's always getting up way before I do. So I get up, and I don't see her. I look in the room, and she's dead asleep on the bed. So I go back and lay down on the couch. And then I don't go to sleep. I start hearing something walking back and forth behind me again. And then it slaps me on the top of my head, pats me on the head a few times. And then it goes into the room and bangs on the closet door 3 times. Bam, bam, bam. I'm like, okay, what is that? So I, like, have the chills, and I'm kind of afraid to turn around, and this thing keeps on walking back and forth behind me. So I end up falling asleep. it touches my head, and I feel this electrical feeling, and I fall asleep, and I'm shown the vision of a motorcycle at the bottom of the stairs, and then a bike the same color as a motorcycle, like a matte gray, and the identification had somebody's name in it. His name was Kenneth, and I can't remember the last name, but I look at the identification, and then I wake up, and I'm like, oh, wow, that was strange. You know, this. You know, I'm shown this image of this person, and next thing you know, I'm looking behind me, and there's the same lights that I described on Thanksgiving of 2010, the same exact thing above my dining room table. And this is with my own eyes. I didn't fall asleep back to sleep after this either. And they were like almost like rainbow colors, like if you look through a prism and shine a light through a prism. And it was like that, and it just formed into a ball and just disappeared. It's like it just wanted me to know who, I don't know if that was a spirit. I don't know if that was an alien encounter. I don't know what it was. But the same person that was shown to me on the identification badge was someone that I talked to when I was taken to this, I would like to say it's kind of like a planetarium type area where they were explaining to me some things. And this person came out and said, I'm just like you. They come and get me. My job here is to help teach them our culture. It was the same person.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're explaining to me how they don't have the monetary system, and you know everybody there is equal, and the scientists are no greater than the shoe shiner, you know. And
wouldn't that be amazing, you know, to know that can happen, and it is successful, and it can work, because I mean, look at what we're in, one hell of a situation, you know, obviously on our planet, which makes so much sense of why they're, you know, trying to tell us that, you know, we're destroying everything.
That's their main message to me, is that our monetary system is destroying us. We get rid of the monetary system and we will evolve. That's their main message, is that they don't have a monetary system and everything works out that way. Everything, you know, everybody is happy. You know, nobody has to worry about having more or less than anybody else. There's no greed.
Right. And the money, of course, is what instills the greed, because a person feels that their worth is based on how much money they have and the things that they can have.
Right.
And so we've got people who have so much money that they'll never be able to spend it. And then you've got others that don't have enough to even eat.
Right.
So you know, it's very off balance. But do you think that a lot of the reason why we don't change this is the government? Is the people in charge?
Yes, that it's not necessarily the government. It's the people that's controlling the government. You know, I'm not going to claim to be an expert on why. This is just all opinion, you know, at this point. But I believe it's, you know, the people behind the government, you know, the Illuminati at that point, you know, what people like to, you know, refer to as the Illuminati, you know, trying to, you know, be like the aliens that they've come in contact with. You know, they believe that they're the bloodline of these beings and they want to be like them. So they want to create one world. So they're using their money and influence to control the government into, you know, making, you know, getting rid of the middle class. And then the next step is to get rid of the low class or the poor class. You know, it gets into all of that. So I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to take a catastrophe to end up doing the right thing.
Yeah, I back you there. I think that's exactly what's the case. Okay, so is there another story or something that you would like to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I have plenty. I can go... This could be a two-day show, you know. We could talk about this all week, you know. The only, you know, we talk about dates and people talk, you know, stuff like that. The only date I was ever shown, and, you know, this was actually given to me immediately after what I call the violent abduction. You know, that's when I first started having, like, real psychic dreams. I was shown a vision, and I walked outside of where I lived in Oakland, on 10th Avenue in Oakland, and there were dirigibles, you know, or airships, you know, just like, you know, like the Goodyear blimps, you know, type. Just a bunch of them in the air all over the place. And there was nothing but utter destruction around, like buildings had been toppled and crumbled. And I look up in the air and one of the ships said USSR. Well, actually, they all did. They said USSR and it said 2017 on it.
Wow.
Yes. And that's a really strange vision that I was shown. It was very real to me. It wasn't like a regular dream. You know, it's just these ships all over the place. It was like we were invaded. We were destroyed. Russia, you know, they went from Russia, you know, Russia back to the USSR. And they just pretty much kicked our ass. I hate to say that. A lot of people will be mad at me for even having the notion that somebody else can do that to America. But that's just the vision I was shown, you know. And I was at a conference, you know, I had a booth with Anthony Sanchez. And, you know, I met several people there, you know, and one of them, you know, had read my book and said, you know, I was reading the chapter about 2017. He said, do you know the significance of that date? And I'm like, no. He's like, you know, that would mark the 100-year anniversary of the Russian Revolution. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, that's strange. And if you look at what's going on right now with Edward Snowden and, you know, him being granted asylum, and our relationship seems to be straining with Russia right now. And it seems to be headed that way, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and what's interesting is that I get a lot of, you know, visions and premonitions, and, you know, something has been, that date has actually come up so many times. And, you know, I did a prediction show at the beginning of the year, and it was very much, you know, a lot of the things that I got, and people kept saying, you know, oh, when do you think the end of the world? And once again, I don't see it. I do see some catastrophes as far as, you know, a major earthquake and stuff around the West Coast and some things like that. But I didn't see anything, you know, once again, that was, you know, the end of the world. But that the year that you're talking about, it kept coming up. So,
2017?
But I wasn't. Yes.
Oh,
so
wow.
I, you know, that's very interesting that you said that, because it's, I just keep getting the 2017, but no other information, but
yes.
Something that it's that's a major, you know, when it's consistently keeps coming to me, I usually know, okay, this is something I need to pay attention to. And I actually have a scratch pad, which I like kind of jot things down whenever I get them. And you'll see it's like over, I think, 2 months, I had like 2017 wrote on the book, like multiple days. And, you know, it just kept bringing, I was like, what in the world is, I mean, you're giving me the day, you know, of the year, but you're not giving me what's going to happen. So
right.
It's interesting. You know, I like a real question real quick is, do you feel that, you know, my feeling is that, you know, the paranormal world and the UFO world and, you know, psychics and, you know, psychic abilities and stuff like that is all very intertwined.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Okay, because I get so many people, and especially since things have come out on TV, everybody is so fragmented. Like, you know, when I first started investigating paranormal, it was everything. You know, now it's like, you know, the UFO stuff is all in its own thing, and then you've got, you know, paranormal's in its own thing, Bigfoot and cryptos, and, you know, cryptozoology is in its own thing, you know, and everybody can believe in what they believe in, but they don't believe in the other stuff.
Right, and that's kind of wrong. People always want to believe one thing or another. They, you know, like science, religion, and nature. They don't believe that it can work together when actually they do work with each other. They do complement each other, you know. So I always tell people there's no one answer to everything. Not one particular person is right. All of it comes together. The psychic experiences, they have to do with our spirituality. Our spirituality, you know, it has to do with, you know, other beings out there, you know, it all comes together to one point.
And I think that's why it's so important that all of these fields, you know, that they do work with each other, because the information, there's so much information that once I started investigating both sides and, you know, all different sides, I saw so many connections, and I was like, oh my gosh, do you know how much more we could, you know, further, you know, where our research, if everybody can put this stuff together and compared it and weren't, you know, so worried about they believe in what, you know, like a UFO, but they don't believe in, you know, somebody, you know, being haunted or, you know, things like that. We got another question real quick. Sacktown, because in the chat room is asking that if you can tell us anything about the moon bases, have they given you any information about those?
No, not in particular, but as I say, you know, a lot of times I'll ask a question to myself. You know, you don't always have to be asleep to get an answer to things. You know, I've learned that I can meditate and ask a question, and I will be given an answer, and it'll almost seem like I'm answering it myself, but it'll be coming from somewhere else. And there are, you know, I was told pretty much there are moon bases. You know, they're actually had an experience, and I did write about that, to where I was taken to the moon, and there were beings there. You know, they had a facility there. I don't know if it was the past, present, or future, you know, but that there are bases on the moon, you know, and that they actually did work with the Nazis and all of that, you know. So this is stuff to where it's more speculation, and I'm still trying to seek confirmation on certain things, but my strong belief, which I really don't have any doubt, that there are really moon bases. There is the Nazi building there. The Germans beat us to it, you know. So I can say yes.
Okay. And you know, what do you think that the significance of the sun right now? I mean, we're seeing all of these different ships and stuff that are craft that are making their way to the sun, and it seems like they almost have a tether where, you know, it almost looks like they're either re-energizing. Some of them we see that go through the sun, or you know, or go disappear into it. I mean, any ideas or thoughts about that?
I have an opinion on that. I don't have an answer on that. My opinion is there are spiritual beings, and there are also probably highly evolved, intelligent beings that feed off of the energy of the sun. There's beings in space that don't require ships. They have they don't have bodies like we do. You know, there's all kind of stuff out there that we just don't know about yet, you know, and there may, you know, I saw the image to where it looked like it was a craft going into the moon. Not into the moon, but into the sun. And I saw that, and I believe that's real. You know, I believe that was actually a craft that was not affected by the heat of the sun. You know, their physics are different when you go into space. You know, Newtonian physics don't apply when you get into these different realms.
Okay, and somebody's now asking, Sunshine and Smiles is saying, how about the crystal pyramids in the Bermuda Triangle that have been found?
I just recently heard about that. I really can't answer that. All I can say is there's lots of stuff that's going to be discovered here on Earth that's going to confirm that our existence spans way beyond the Nazcas and the Egyptians. You know, our existence goes, you know, millions of years back as far as intelligent. You know, Earth has been wiped out several times. We have evolved several times on this planet. We are not the smartest, you know, of the evolution. You know, we're just going to be the last to be wiped out. You know, they had buildings, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. They had vehicles, all of that. But there's no evidence of it. Only because, let's say there was a natural disaster. And, you know, people say, oh, a million years from now, people are going to be able to tell that we were here. No, they won't. There will be no evidence of any buildings. You know, they will be totally destroyed. You know, they will be broken down.
Right.
So this has happened many times. So a lot of civilizations ended up having stone structures or structures that don't break down through weather, you know, or any kind of terraforming. And those are what people are finding, you know. So I don't know too much about the crystal structures found in the Bermuda Triangle, but I did hear something about it. I'm always hearing something new about something new discovered, you know, under the ocean's floor. And I just go back to say that's not going to be the last thing that we're going to discover.
All right, because we remember that a lot of, you know, I mean, over millions of years, I mean, in some places, you know, it was underwater, and other places that were above ground are now underwater, you know. So, it's changed so dramatically, so many different things, like Atlantis, everything else. So we're getting all kinds of questions, of course, at the last minute that are coming through. Story Spirit for you is asking, do you think that we really landed on the moon?
Oh, yes, we did land on the moon. I remember watching, you know, I hear about the debunked stories of people saying, well, look at the lighting and all of that. But then I watched Mythbusters. And they showed, okay, well, you know what?
Okay.
This actually proves that we landed on the moon, because This is actually how the light would work. This is why the flag would actually move in this particular way. So they're saying this couldn't have been fake. We wouldn't have known this back then, because if we did repeated the same thing now, these are the things that would have happened. You know, as far as like the hills and the shadows being in different positions, that's how it actually is. But, you know, as far as I do believe that there are people trying to discredit it, because they don't want us to know what they found on the moon. So they don't want us to, not believe that we were there in the first place.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay, looks like we have one more before we stop taking questions. And it's from Robin Scott. And Robin says, what about the face on Mars? Do you think that there's any current life on Mars?
Oh, definitely. There definitely is. This is one thing that I was actually shown, that there is seasonal water on Mars. I was actually shown a particular area, and these things will get airbrushed out of any images that you receive. The Curiosity rover is not going to show you. I was actually signed up to receive images, but then they cut everybody off from being able to receive the images as they got them, because they did find certain things.
Right.
Okay, so I remember getting that email saying that the ITFF, or whatever it's called, will no longer be transmitting images, but you'll be able to get the ones that we download by going to this particular site or click this link. But they have seasonal water.
Which is no different than NASA, so they'll get it. Yeah,
right.
So they get it, download it, air push it out, and then put it
right
out to the public, say, hey, there's nothing there.
I don't want to say that there's like a civilization there right now, but Mars is kind of like a resting place, if you know what I mean. Like where.
Okay. So it's there. Like if other life goes and they need to stop.
Right. Exactly.
Somewhere in between.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like a stopping point, kind of like a rest stop, a truck stop, and it's seasonal.
Okay.
That's one thing I was told. This always has been, you know, embedded to me, that it's seasonal. The water comes up. They showed me this geyser, and it comes up ever so often, and all this water is at the base of it's kind of like at the base of this mountainous area, and it flows down into this valley, and all this water just comes gushing up out of this geyser. And they showed me where there's a town over there which keeps on getting flooded. And that when that time of the year comes along and people stop there, they stay up in the mountainous area. And they showed me these little homes. They're not like homes like traditionally to how we see homes, but they pretty much migrate there and stay there whenever the water season from the geyser comes in that particular area. But all that is real. They
information,
have
information. I'm telling you.
Yeah, there's, you know, I was shown pyramids, you know, all kind of stuff. There's stuff on Mars that you would not believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is so amazing. I mean, Benjamin, I'm going to have you back on again because,
like
you said, there's just so much information that we haven't been able to cover. And I know that my listeners are going to get flooded with messages and, you know, emails after this show because of it. But, you know, I hope that you would come back on again. We'll have you get you scheduled and have you come and talk a little bit more about all this, because I just find it absolutely amazing.
Oh, yes, because now that you're getting into Mars and we don't have time yet, because we would need another show, I would like to talk to you about Laura Magdalene Eisenhower.
Right.
And there was a YouTube program that I watched that involved her. It's called Whistleblowers on U.S. Government. Time travel and teleportation.
Yeah.
And this is something that I was involved in unwittingly, and this is one of the confirmations that I received that I had actually been there. And this story alone would probably take another, you know, 20, well, maybe another 5 minutes to get through if I ran through it real fast. But if anybody goes to YouTube, just type in whistleblowers on U.S. government, all that was real. And I experienced that along with Laura Eisenhower. So I know it's real.
Well, you know, to let you know, Laura Eisenhower is actually a good friend of mine. And
oh, really?
I've actually had her on my show. And,
you're going to have to connect us because
there's a big thing about – yes, I will. I absolutely will. And maybe what we'll do is we'll have her on the show and you on the show both, you know.
I would love that.
And that might be –
I've been trying to reach her, and I hadn't received. I have not received anything from her yet.
Looks like we're out of time. So I want you to give your website real quick, and then I will put everything out on my Facebook page as well for you.
Yes, my website is The Alien Illuminati. You have to put the in there, thealienilluminati.com, and you can get my book. There's two links on there, one to get it, a softbound copy, and also through Amazon. But there's lots of interesting information there and lots of videos. So everybody, please visit my website, thealienilluminati.com.
All right. Well, we're at the end of the show, and we want to thank once again Benjamin for coming on the show. We will definitely have him back. If there's any questions or any comments, please make sure to send them to me on Facebook or through paranormalinvestigator916@gmail.com. We will be back next week with another great, a guest and another great topic. And I want to thank everybody in chat for once again being here, all the listeners. You guys are amazing, and I hope that I can continue giving you the shows and the topics that you want, so make sure to keep giving them to me. So I will, at that point, say good night for the night. Thank you, Benjamin. We'll have you on again, and good night, everyone.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.